This is Phil Pritchett. Welcome to the P2 Podcast.
There's never been a better time than right now to be a musician.
Giddy hit Austin!
My name's Phil, and I just want to play rock and roll, man.
Tougher than the rest.
Mona Lisa, move closer. I'm scared tonight. I watched the news this evening and there's much to fear. They say a mighty storm is brewing up. The outlying areas burning up. They'll let us know more when they hear. Somewhere a song is playing with lyrics that all of them don't understand. And I found I knew the words. Yeah. I started looking around. I started thinking about the things I found. I started looking around. I started looking around.
Bam. Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Coming to you from Trinidad World Recording Studios in beautiful Fort Worth, my studio here in Fort Worth, Texas. Where sound is a way of life, where art still lives, despite what you see on the magazines and on TV and on the radio. Just know that some of us are out there doing it, man. Out in the frontier. Speaking of guys doing it, we've got Manny Morales here. From Kreger's Operation, Front of House, Executive Surf Club.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't have enough of last week. He's back here again.
Again.
Good to see you, my friend.
It's a pleasure to be here, Phil.
And we also got Alan Huff, keyboardist extraordinaire. Played on all kinds of projects now, of course, with Kreger. Been with Kreger now for how long?
I'm in my fifth year, so
five and a half years with Roger Kreger.
5.5 years now.
A veteran of the Doug Supernaw explosion that world experienced in the 90s.
And
well, last week we were talking about y'all's past a little bit. You know how Manny skateboarding around, knocking into people out there at the downtown Corpus. You know, singing Black Flag songs in a garage band, and Huff listening to his brother's Beatles albums, and playing the Cars on his Moog, and going to see U2 back in the early '80s. Great stuff.
Great.
Y'all seen some things. It's always difficult for me in here running the studio and working with a lot of young guys, some guys that are 20, 21, coming in with their uncle or, hey, he believes in me, man, we're going to make this record and we're hiring the radio guy. And that's how a lot of guys get things done, get things rolling. But Huff, you were talking about how it makes guys lazy, the recording process, the pitch correction, that there's kind of this sense that anything can be fixed. Just to give a, let me paint this picture a little bit with movies. We all saw the movie Jaws, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You didn't see the shark very much. It was a cardboard fin in the water and some ketchup, and we were all scared.
Yeah, of course.
Really scared.
That was a big fin.
You wonder if Jaws was made today. If Jaws was made today, the CGI digital shark would be just... It'd just be doing like bat flips over the boat and just thrash it. You know what I mean? It'd be like King Kong or something. It'd be so over the top and just and it'd be spectacular, but it looks cool, but it just doesn't look real. And something I ask myself when I'm recording, and this is going to your point about getting lazy in the studio, is there is sort of a, when you hear a great sounding record these days, they're all great sounding. I mean, hell, you can compress at the input stage. And in the old days, a great sound on a record was an accomplishment. Man, that sounds pretty damn good, man. We compressed the snare, and then we cycled it back. We had one other compressor. That's all we had. I mean, and now there's just limitless things. So you just pile it on, and everybody, it's just the mastering's just, it's just totally maxed out, and all mistakes are corrected, and you can have a good track.
We can fix it at mix down.
And not know if anybody can really play the drums or sing. So it poses the question, how come my record's not selling or something? Is it just not that hard to make a good-sounding musical recording? I mean, something decent, something presentable?
I think it's very hard to make a good record these days. I mean, I think some of them are coming out.
But it seems like if you just stayed with G, C, and D, and I hire you to play keys, and I bring in Medeiros to play drums, we're going to get something this are we decent?
Some magic.
That's a lot more than hitting the chords together. You
even
know?
If the guy has just got a song, it's okay. I mean,
yeah,
you can just do something okay. It seemed like in the old days, hell, if you weren't pretty good, no one even wanted to mess with you.
Now, this is where I drew the line in the sand for the live
studio. If you weren't bad together, right, you could also get a gig. You know what I mean? Like some of them, just the raw sound of some of those early bands that we were talking about.
Well, but they're creative, man. Yeah, I mean, right. Like the Violent Femmes or something. You're like, oh, but they're badass. Yeah. I mean, or Eric Clapton, just someone with a real creative, thing. Well, or you couldn't get past square one.
Or the Kinks, you know, because they were just a glorified garage band.
That's right.
But, you know, they hit all them chords together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, gosh, Van Halen covered some of their stuff. Yeah, and, I mean, still is almost timeless.
My whole thing is that I honestly think that bands are subscribing to the theory that there is a formula.
Right.
All right, so check this out. Go to the right studio, get the right producer, get the right musicians
that's
to play on the record.
There's a blueprint. There's a blueprint to do that. That does not require a musical creative vision on the part of the guy writing the checks at all. It's just like
they do this and they follow the blueprint and they end up with the product, the CD.
Right.
And then it's time to go play the CD.
Yeah.
You know, or play the music live. And that's where I really do think that there's a lot of bands out there that really do think there is a formula, and there may be. Mm-hmm. I didn't know about this formula until, you know, I got out of Corpus and went on the road and saw that there is some method to the madness.
Right.
But I really do think a lot of the bands just think, okay, I'm going to hire this booking agent. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hire this producer. I'm going to hire, you know, and in some cases, this sound company,
right,
you know, or this front of house guy, and it's just going to be great. But the guys still have to be able to pull it off. You know, the guy still has to be able to sing. You know, the guy still has to be able to play the piano.
Yeah.
And, you know, and no offense to the young guys, because some of these guys are, like, extremely talented.
Sure.
But you can't put a price on the practice, I think. Maybe that just makes me old school, you know.
Right, no,
if somebody's played, you know, 300 gigs in front of an audience, mm-hmm, they're going to be better than someone that's, you know, the first time out, unless
that's
they're just
right.
a natural and just, you know, the next Elvis Presley or whoever it is, you know.
And you can't just throw a 6 minor and a burrito in there because you think that's what everybody wants.
That's right. Yeah. That's right.
You know, because some people think, wow, they're doing it, so I'm going to talk about, you know, you know, drinking beer till I can't drink anymore.
Yeah. I'm just asking you guys because I feel like I get mad at myself, but I'm always not far from right when someone says, hey, you know, check this out. Here's my record, or here's this guy. And I look at the cover, and I know what it's going to be. It's never blistering the sun, man. It's never. It's never like, what the hell's he doing? He's playing pots and pans, man.
Just, yeah.
What? Like, start that over. There's never any creativity or something. In this realm, I feel like it's very limited. Whereas back in those, you too, man, to succeed, you had to break all the rules. You had to be creative.
You had to find your own sounds.
You had to be the
edge.
You had to be original. The edge couldn't play like Eric Clapton, so what the hell is he going to do?
Yeah.
What do you mean? I'm just going to sit there and dub it. No, he had to just go to the effects and find something, man.
Yeah, something
he
different,
had to do
yeah.
something.
And find your own sound.
And now guys stand around because they buy a J45 Gibson and wonder, well, how the hell was my career not taking off?
Yeah.
I was like, you suck, dude. I don't know. You broke 10 songs. they get kind of like, well, man, this other guy's doing it, and that's the problem. There are guys who are doing it, apparently.
Well,
but I think you're right, Manny.
I think some of those effects when they, I'm going to use so-and-so's guitar sound because I can just MIDI it down, and I'm going to use Eddie Bayer's drum sounds and so-and-so's drums instead of just back then. It was like, let's create your drum sound.
Right.
Let's create your guitar sound, you know. Maybe we don't need piano on this, you know, play the organ. And it's kind of a hit-and-miss thing, but that's when you know you have something really going.
Right.
You know? And like on Roger's record, you know, we kept some of that stuff minimal that we did with Lloyd Maines.
Right.
I like to be produced. I really do. I mean, I feel like I'll never get my feelings hurt in the studio, but I'm going to pretty much play what I think goes there.
Right.
But if you tell me that's not where I want to go with it,
uh-huh.
I mean, I'll have guys sing me what they want because I really want to make the artist happy, because when they go out and do it, they got to listen to that forever.
Right.
And if they didn't like something I did, it's going to be like, you know, taking a pin and sticking it every time they hear it, you know. Right. And another thing these guys have a problem with, I find when I'm cutting, is, oh, do a piano, now do an organ track. I'm like, well, do y'all have a piano player and an organ player? They're like, no. And I'm like, well, we really can't base this song on piano because when Nanny hears your record and you show up with, you know.
Yeah, the talent buyer with the three piece.
You know, have an orchestra and
where's the steel? Where's the piano? Where's the Hammond? Where's, you know, where's the trumpets, man? What happened?
That's right. Yeah.
You can overproduce
certain
things.
Yeah, well, you just have so much at your fingertips. And without something really unique to work around or something, I just... There's, you know, I got to be careful saying some of this stuff because I don't want to make anyone feel like it. I guess, you know, the bands y'all talk about, you know, that we listen to, man, there is that creative. You can almost just get it all the way down to the Gummy Bears and Eddie Van Halen's guitar, or the Moog for the Cars, or, you know, the Violent Femmes, man. The guy just played a snare drum.
Yeah, that's it.
I don't know if you want to call it a gimmick or what. I mean, but there was just something they were doing differently. You know, and they had some energy and some great songs, and the Edge's guitar sound. There was something there, man.
Yeah.
Something.
It was different.
And I feel like it's not that these guys aren't good, a lot of them, but I think it doesn't even occur to them that they need to just practice and come up with something from outer space.
You know,
that's going to make me stand up right here and go, wow!
Yeah.
It never happens. I feel like I'm cynical, but I'm just like.
Yeah, it's easy to get that way after listening to a bunch of demos and maybe even, you know.
Well,
like,
you run in sound,
watching
you know,
a bunch of bands,
yeah, right,
you know, watching
right.
a bunch of bands. The thing that is doing it for me nowadays is actually vocals.
Yeah.
The vocals are kind of changing. Everybody has this, you know, pretty much cookie cutter guitar tone, you uh-huh. know, and then the drums have gone from wide open, you know, Bonham sounds to like these, almost everything has a rock, you know, a rock sound, and you know, and the bass is, you know, that doesn't vary that much.
Mm-hmm.
No offense to bass players at all, but
hey,
you know,
man, my tone.
and yeah, exactly, and you know, and it's all just sounds like this one style of music. So the only thing that ever makes it different, I think, is the vocals. So when I hear somebody that sounds different,
it's got a unique voice.
A unique voice, thank
Absolutely.
You. Yeah, that's what does it for me nowadays, because it's the same, like you're saying, DCG, you know, and it's every once in a while they put a you know, a bridge in here and change it up just a little bit, but the formula is there.
Right.
So every once in a while, you know, somebody with a unique vocal comes around, and you're just kind of like, wow, man, this is, you know, at least it's refreshing and not the same, even though it may be the same topic over and over again. You know, at least it's.
Yeah, everybody generally.
At least
I think that's a good point. Everybody kind of plays the same gear.
Everybody plays it
kind of the same. And you know, you just those bands we're talking about. Just everybody had their own thing or something that they. No one. It's just you weren't going to make it by sounding like everybody else. But nowadays, everybody says, "Well, I want to sound just like that."
Yeah, exactly.
So I'll also be successful. I'm like, man, I think you're thinking about it all wrong here.
Yeah,
what? You need to practice. Go into your closet, rig up some old crummy amp with
Alamo.
Well, you know what I'm saying? And just, man, come up with something.
Yeah.
And come back.
Bend that one note and make everybody feel it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
B.B. King.
Yeah.
Like Willie Nelson's guitar. I'm like, man, just do one thing that no one else does. And you're gonna have something better off. Like Junior Brown.
Yeah.
With the Git Steel. Like, that's a great example of someone who. He's just not up there with a Telecaster and a cowboy hat, trying to get everybody to pay attention. I mean, he did something, and now we can all sit there and go, wow, you know.
What's that guy Randolph?
Robert Randolph.
He kind of
took a lot of
that
different
to,
stuff.
You know,
yeah.
it's
a different
steel and all, but he's just you cannot
it's
not watch him when he's doing
no
his
doubt
thing,
about
man.
It. That's a good example of a guy.
You know,
And I feel like the scene we're in, the Texas Red Dirt thing, is I feel like it's so rife with a lot of examples of guys who, you know, at least on the surface, saying, well, he's just playing a few chords, he's got a lot of people following him, and he's doing his thing, and that's great, and people pattern themselves after it, but there seems to be not a lot of guys pushing the limits of things.
Yeah. Is that a fair statement, maybe?
Yeah. I'm just like,
that's why I love the live shows. And that's why I think that's what separates a lot of artists and entertainers, if you will, you know, the live shows. I love where I'm at now because the live show is like, you know, it's pretty diverse.
It's great, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty diverse. And, you know, and a three-piece band, I love all music, for starters, but I love watching good live music.
Sure.
You know, it could be any kind of music. We were in New York the other day, and we saw an R&B band that had a little bit of rap and a little bit of reggae, and it was in this little bitty
the Groove
club. The Groove club. Is that the name of the club?
In the Village, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just great, but those cats were doing it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was just like... You couldn't help but move.
And then that one also, and then we went to the other place down in the cellar, and that was a Cafe Wah, where
Dylan
played.
Hendrix.
Those were some seasoned musicians in that band.
Oh, y'all were up there in the heart of it, man.
Yeah. Oh, we were. Yeah. It was fun. And we did a show up there. I went in January just to visit with my wife, and then I found out we were going back. We actually got to go play, and, you know, it's kind of cool, you know, to have 3,500, 4,000 people come out and see you play in New York City.
Where were y'all playing there?
We played a place called Terminal 5, and it wasn't just us. It was us and then Reckless Kelly, Eli Young Band, and Pat Green.
Yeah.
And it was a Texas Independence Day celebration.
I think that's what it was.
Sure,
annual. You know, now with all these, you know, Facebook and all that, you can get word out so fast.
A lot of Texans living up there. People like the music.
And they
like it.
They said, wear your college shirt, you get a free drink. Uh-huh. Yeah, and these people are all plunking down $40, man.
And I think that proves that people kind of still really do. You have to sell it on the live show, you know. Sure, absolutely. You can package it up, you can record it, you can do whatever you need to do. But man, if you can't deliver on the live show, you're gonna come and go really fast. I think.
You know? Live and die. Band's only as good as their live show.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, all fairness, there's 12 notes.
That's it. Yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's 12 notes.
Yeah. And I think they've all been played, right?
They've all been played. That's what they told me. We were loading out one night back to kind of like this, you know, cookie cutter and everybody following everybody else. We were loading out the other night and we could sing The Wallflower, Sixth Avenue Heartache.
To four
different songs within 10 that were played.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Same.
Oh, just with or without you. Right.
Yeah. And it was pretty crazy, man.
Well, man, we are here with Manny Morales and Alan Huff from the Roger Kreger outfit. Man, they didn't get enough of last week. They're back this week talking about music, man. Where it has been, where it may be going. In the next section here, we're going to talk a little bit more along those lines. So y'all stay tuned. We'll be right back on the P2 Podcast. I started looking around. I started thinking about the things I found. I started looking around. Fans, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. It is Phil Pritchard here on the P2 Podcast. Did you know you can come right here to Fort Worth, Texas, and record with me and the full band or whoever else you want? Pete Coatney, you can pick him up for a song. He lives down the road. Call me, 817-733-5256, or email me, phil@philpritchard.com. Don't hang up or be alarmed when I answer the phone or email you right back at your office saying, let's do it, man. It's what we do. The great Alan Huff is here. The great Manny Morales is here. A couple guys I've known in this deal for a long time. We're so thrilled they joined us here today to share some of their views. Well, speaking of sharing a few views, something we always, a good topic to always address is, you know, we've talked about bands we like and things. We'll start with you, Manny. Name me maybe a band, a guilty pleasure, big guilty pleasure that you're into, maybe ashamed to admit it. And after that, someone that everyone tells you think is great, that you're supposed to love and is great, but you're just like, I just never got it.
Oh,
not
no,
into
here
it.
We go.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's good.
Now, in the past, just to make you feel a little better, I mean, I've had people sit on that couch and just go, Neil Young, man, I never got it. Just, well, come on, you know. Okay. I've had Pete Coatney, Pete Coatney, Jack Ingram's drummer, a beloved guy. He was sitting right there. I go, do you have a guilty pleasure? He goes, I don't know, man. Well, I really like Wham. I just like, I was like, that would qualify as a guilty pleasure. That's it. That makes the cut. What about you, Manny?
I have one guilty pleasure, and it's not necessarily one band, genre, or anything else. It is radio.
Radio.
I am a huge fan of radio. I will do...
What do you mean radio? Like
just radio in general. I love the fact that it's free. I love the fact that I can go from 80s to classic rock and whatever else.
So when you're driving around Corpus Christi, your skateboard in the back, couple of speakers... You just flipping around.
That's all I'm doing.
You like the rhythm, the music, the jock talk. What do you like?
All of it.
The commercials.
All of it. Every single bit of it. I listen to all the commercials. I listen to every single bit of it. I am just like,
you're the last guy in the world that listens to the commercials.
Even on TV, I love all of it. The radio is just, it does it for me like you wouldn't even imagine. And people kind of freak out when I tell them that.
That's weird. I'm freaking out. I'm freaking out.
It's just all kinds of stuff, too. I mean, I am a huge 80s fan. Like, New Wave, probably my biggest guilty pleasure. And there's a lot of
everybody
nowadays.
Everybody loves New Wave.
Like
who, though?
Psychedelic Furs.
Okay.
The Cure.
Oh, pretty
The Cure. The Cure.
Yeah?
Yeah, the Psychedelic Furs. I bet Huck's been to a
Psychedelic Furs show.
In Excess, probably one of my all-time favorite bands.
In Excess, is that right? Okay.
Yes, one of my all-time favorite bands.
A little guilty. You're a little guilty as charged.
You still hear them on the radio, so you know.
All right, who's somebody that everybody goes, Manny, man, how can you not like?
Without hesitation, Willie Nelson.
Oh, wow.
Wow,
they're
going to
kick me off the air. They're going to kick us off the air down there at 105.3.
See, I got your back, man. I don't agree with you, but I have your back.
They're going to kick us off the air at 105.3 down there in Tomball.
They're going to
kick us off the air at the
ranch
here.
Here's the thing.
Radio Free Texas. That's the sound of my consistency going down the drain.
Well, thanks to modern day technology, you can get rid of it on the mix down.
No, we're leaving it. The podcast, no editing. It's like making a Pritchett album. It's just all the mistakes are in there.
I just don't get the vocals. That's all it is.
Yeah.
I love the lyrical content. I love the musicianship. I just can't get past the vocals,
the voice,
man.
Grates
that's
on
all
you.
There is to it. You know, okay. That's all there. And the guys
fair
in the
enough,
band,
fair enough.
You know, they've just about beat me up, you know, and then they've almost convinced me. But it's not going to happen. I believe he is a great artist.
Right.
I just can't get past the vocals, man.
That's all it is.
That's all it is. Right. I love, you know, all the songs. I just can't. And I think the question was like somebody that I'm supposed to love.
That was the question.
You more than
answered that question.
Especially, you know, someone that has influence, especially like this.
Given
scene.
The option of the Psychedelic Furs or Willie Nelson,
you're definitely
Manny takes
the Psychedelic
Furs.
Hey, man.
You heard it right here. Yeah. Hey, all you country bands trying to get booked at the surf clubs, why won't this guy call me back?
Learn
now,
Pretty in Pink.
Now you know.
Learn Pretty in Pink.
Learn Pretty
in
Pink.
Now you know.
Learn Pretty in Pink.
Manny with his skateboard and his iPod listening to the Psychedelic Furs.
That was a guilty pleasure, by the way.
Cruising down Water Street.
See what you get for
Willie
being
Nelson
honest.
Shrugging his shoulders. Yeah, whatever. Well, let's move on to Alan Huff here. Boy, he's just quivering over here.
Wow,
the sweat is rolling down his forehead. I wish you could see it right here, fans.
Yeah.
His turn is up. Manny has just thrown down
that
the gauntlet.
I'm still all about the melody.
Yeah.
You know, and
that wasn't
and
the question.
Good singers. Singers.
Celine Dion.
Well, come on now. Okay, you know, nothing against that, because, you know, that
help me out here. Guilty pleasure. Come on, man. Don't
if you dissect that, that's great stuff. But I'm a big fan of Train.
Big fan of Train.
Pat Monahan of all people, man. Is that crazy? Why do you
laugh? Well, we had a lot of Train analogies and jokes through the years. Everyman pop band a little bit.
Yeah.
Big fan. Good songs.
Oh,
big
great
hits.
Songs.
Huge hits.
Great songs. And I've seen them a few times.
Yeah.
And, then again, you know, I could go on to like Blue October and stuff.
Sure.
There's a few people I'll say, if you buy the record and you don't like it, like,
are you playing the safe card?
Consent to Treatment. Consent to Treatment. And, you know, I'll say, if you don't like it, I'll give your money.
Sure.
You know, whatever. I just think it's great stuff.
All right. And, Train. Dig a little deeper. Dig a little deeper.
Man, this is going to sound weird, I wasn't a real big fan of Journey when they Steve Perry guy.
Here we go.
Okay.
All right.
And, gosh, man, that is a really tough question. I mean, my I'm a Alison Krauss and James Taylor on a Sunday morning. I know,
but
right?
That's cool.
Is that sappy?
No, that's what everybody likes. That stuff. That's good music. I'm talking about guilty.
A guilty pleasure.
Bonnie
guilty.
Prince Billy.
Who?
If you wait another
who
day.
Who is that?
I don't know.
Who is that? I don't know.
Billy, and the guys who hear this that I made them with this
the,
song.
Is that the If You Wait Another Day, I'll Wait Another Day?
No, man, come on. It's If You Wait Another Day, I Will Wait Another Day.
Yeah, okay.
And that's the verse.
Nice.
That is the verse.
All right.
Over and over. And then I think that's the chorus too.
Yeah.
But it's about. Anyway, we will get into that. Bonnie Prince Billy.
That's the guilty pleasure. He's
awesome.
Playing the safe card.
Guilty pleasure. Okay.
Gosh, I ruined it for the whole crew already.
I was hoping for like Belinda Carlisle's solo work or something.
Oh, yeah.
Or,
yes. French Kiss in the USA. Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. Okay.
Hey, yeah, I'm telling you, I'm down with it.
Well, you like it all. You kind of said you love all music.
I really do. And I guess my, you know, what that I don't care for or don't get is a Gregorian chants.
Come on.
I mean, I know. I really do love everything, man. I'm sorry.
Okay,
that's
who's somebody? Oh, you love the Gregorian chants?
No, that's the only one I could think that I just don't get it.
So, wait a minute.
Wait a minute. He said Willie Nelson. It's got to be... I mean, no one likes the Gregorian chants.
Well, if no one knows Huff, the first time you meet him, you're going to love him. That's for sure. So, I mean,
I've seen Hanson four times.
Okay, now there's guilty pleasure. Hanson. That'll qualify. Yeah,
They were awesome, man.
Okay,
Having girls, you know, I went through the whole New Kids on the Block thing.
Right.
Went through the whole Hanson thing. I guess if I had a younger girl, I'd be going through the Jonas Brothers things. But
see, you go to shows with lots of young teenage women.
Okay, that's hard to say. Yeah, I guess kind of so, man. Yeah.
That's so, another show.
Yeah, that's
the Jonas Brothers. Hanson. They're on stage at a mall, squealing fans, and then out there is Alan Huff. With drinking bourbon out of a styrofoam cup,
Colonel Bruce Hampton and the Aquarium Rescue Unit, O'Teal Burbridge on bass. Have you heard of them?
No, uh-uh.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the best music I've ever heard. One of the best live shows I've ever
seen. So who's somebody that you know you're supposed to love? And man, you would never say it backstage and mixed company and just, man, you know, like Willie Nelson. That's hard to beat Willie Nelson in Texas.
Yeah.
But, you know, is there someone else, man? Like, hey, man, you know what? I just met the Stones or...
I saw the Stones. They blew Ian Moore open.
Oh, yeah. Years ago. Was that at Cotton Bowl?
I saw him at the Dome.
Yeah.
Houston and all that.
Right.
Man, I might be stumped on that. I guess, gosh.
You love them all.
I saw
love them all.
Phases and Stages, Circles and Cycles. That's one of my favorite records. Actually, one of my favorite concept
phases
records.
Phases and Stages is one of the greatest records.
Is Redheaded Stranger. And
absolutely.
Those are two Willie Nelson records I'm talking about. Yeah. Because I cut a lot of my teeth on that outlaw
era. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And everybody's saying Texas music. I said, well, I was listening to the original Texas music, mm-hmm. you know, Willie and Waylon, all those guys.
I think that has a lot to do with it. As far as, like, what you're supposed to like and not liking it, you said the Violent Femmes earlier. The Violent Femmes, that guy, you know, that guy's voice annoys a lot of people.
Sure.
I love that.
Yeah.
That's what I grew up on. So, you know, that's, you know, I was just being honest.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So, yeah, you know, that's the whole thing with that.
That's the forum here. That's the forum.
So I was a big Journey fan, and then they got Steve Perry, and they went big, and I kind of felt like they sold out. I mean, because Greg Raleigh was the singer on the early days.
Open my eyes to a new kind.
Yeah.
Now, he was the keyboard player,
yes,
too.
Yes, sir.
And so you like the singing keyboard?
Neil Sean.
Here we go.
Then they bring in Mr. Pretty Boy up front.
Neil Sean on guitar.
Absolutely.
And, you know, they did the Black Magic Woman album with Santana.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that was like a 16-year-old Greg Raleigh singing Black Magic Woman.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know if I knew that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's him. And then they've moved on to form Journey. And then,
but
I guess what I'm saying there, sometimes you want a band to be yours.
Right.
Like, this is mine.
All the time.
But then they make it, and you give up on them. You know, right. And, you know, I like some of the underground.
Yeah. The bands that just stay where you've been.
Stay,
you know, where you can find them. That's right.
Right. You know, and a lot of them, they get
out of reach. Don't have old David Garza play the surf club?
Yep. One of my...
you know David or his family or something down there?
No, I don't know his family, but he was very, very popular at the club when I started getting in there. And he was like one of my first shows also. And the last time I saw him, he did he was opening up a show with Donovan Frankenreiter at the club.
Yeah.
And I think that guy's a phenomenal songwriter.
He's great. I saw him at
Do you know David?
And the Love Beads. Remember it was David Garza?
Yeah.
David Garza and the Love Beads, yeah. I used to see him at a place called Cantina Santa Fe.
Uh-huh.
And it was, it's been a little while now, and that guy is just, I mean, I don't know what he's doing now.
Man, he was the biggest influence on me in my whole career.
Really?
I was in college in Southwestern, Georgetown, 90s. You know, and I'd been in an original band, you know, in high school, and... we wrote our own songs. We thought we were pretty good or whatever. You know, we were real or something. And, man, I went to Liberty Lunch. I said, man, you got to go see this guy, David. He used to be in Twang Twang Shaka Boom, but they'd just broken up. And I didn't know anything. And he comes out there. He's got to be, you know, my age maybe, a couple years older maybe. And I just could not believe how good he was.
I felt the same way.
I was just – and, man, that just – that set the tone for me – I think it served me well, man, because I just was like, man.
Was that the Love Beads?
Yeah.
Was that with band? The dreadlocks? Yeah. The drummer with the dreadlocks?
Michael Hale.
He had a really beautiful Juliana Sheffield singing vocal, that girl. Yeah. And a big band, and he was amazing. And, man, the band makes fun of me because we'll play these festivals with some of these big names. I'm always kind of like, yeah, whatever, I don't know. Yeah,
thank you.
I know him.
Yeah, thanks. There you go, Phil.
But, man, we were walking out a few years ago. We were walking out of the check stop, and David Garza's walking out with some kolaches. And, man, I just go into fan mode. I just go over there and just whip his ass. We're like, dude, hey, David, you don't remember me, man.
But you changed my life.
He's trying to get in his car. You know, he's just getting into his Subaru or something. He's just going, yeah, good to see you, man. I'm talking, man, I made 2020. I mean, yeah, I hadn't been long.
Yeah.
And the band was just like, dude, I've never seen you just go that goofy over. So I go, dude, he is my favorite. I go, he really changed it all. And we got to play a show with him at the Granada Theater last week. I've never played a show with him. And we played with him and Soul Hat. And
really?
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, good show.
And he used my amp. So I was just...
Is Frosty still playing with
him? Yeah. Soul Hat, the original drummer.
Yeah.
I don't even want to change the settings.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny?
Can I use that mic?
We talked about in the last podcast, these Austin musicians... That they, the Texas music guys roll up with the in-ears and the bus and everything, and the 20 t-shirts, and you know, you go see like Bob Schneider, McMurtry, or David or the Gourds. They show up like each of them shows up in their own car.
Yeah.
Just get out with like one guitar case and just go, hey man, you got a guitar case I can borrow? I'm like, oh yeah, you know, places like sold out. They're just like, they just gotta go on stage and. Can I use your amp? I'm like, sure. You know, just
of course you can. Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
Man, these guys don't have any gear. I'm like, dude, they live in Austin. And this is how these guys roll. It's a different deal. You know, it's kind of funny.
Totally.
But David, man, got me on stage. I got to go out and play his guitar. So it was pretty cool, man.
That guy.
I geeked out over that, man.
That guy's definitely one of the most talented cats from Texas. I would say
Alejandro Escovedo.
He's another one.
Yeah.
I guess back to our point about the guys playing music. You know, not to be too hard on the young guys, but you just and I don't know. Maybe it's good old days syndrome, but you just don't see a David. You don't see some guy. I haven't, and maybe I've seen it all. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe he is out there.
Yeah.
I always want to be blown away. I want to have someone rip my head off, and I feel like I'm always like, oh no, now he's gonna. We're gonna do this song. I go, I'll bet it's Road Goes On Forever. And oh, sure enough, here it comes. And, you know, whatever. You always feel like you know what's coming next. Maybe that's from getting old.
So Liberty Lunch, huh?
Yeah, David. Yeah,
I got to go to Armadillo World Headquarters. That was really cool.
I was
17.
What was the greatest show you saw there? Just go there one time or all the time?
Actually, I drive up from Corpus to see certain shows, but I used to go to Raul's, and I guess some of the best shows I saw there was the Skunks and the Big Boys, the Dicks, all those bands there. I mean, it was the Sublette Brothers and all good stuff.
I love when I book bands now at the club, at the surf club, and no one's ever heard of them, but they get floored.
Yeah,
and
seen some guys do that lately?
Josh Weathers' band from up here in this area.
Oh man, we did a show with them at the Aardvark.
Yeah,
and they are very good.
Yeah,
they had the horns. Yeah, all that with them.
I booked them for the first time at the club, and they probably from what I heard back. From
Oh, they're real popular, man. Up here.
So they played to maybe about 150, 200 people at the most. Made it a free show, and everybody's just like, dude, when are these guys coming back?
Yeah, they're
great. I just booked another day with them, you know. So like that's what makes me feel good about coming out here, being on the road, and every once in a while I hear things, I see things, and I like to try and keep my peeps down there, you know, in
that's
the loop.
Right.
You know, because I know Corpus loves live music.
Oh, no question.
I pitch it to where it's like a city that's got a huge soul, you know what I mean?
It does.
So they will appreciate good live music, especially, where the venue that I'm booking now. So,
right.
Or the only venue I've ever booked.
Well, it's one thing I think that might come out of the whole, man, anybody can record, anybody can make a record, anybody can just put their stuff out there. It makes it to where the guys who do pay the big money, it's harder for them to get noticed. It's harder to make it like that. And so it is bands like maybe Weathers or somebody. Everyone's going to have a Facebook page. Everybody's going to have a good sounding record.
Yeah.
But it is going to come down to just, man, who can deliver the goods?
Exactly.
You just kind of go. So, you know, there's a lot of bands who are on the top of the Texas music charts. Then you go to their gig and there's nobody there. And like, man, he's number one. You know, what's wrong? You're kind of like... People saw him once or twice. It's like, it wasn't. It's like, it's all right. I mean,
it kind of sounded like that last show.
You might not heard of Weathers, man, but they come out there with the horns and they just rock, and you're just like, man, wow,
and
you
they,
know?
They, yeah, they lay it all out.
That's
man.
Right.
It's out there, you know? And
well, that's encouraging, man, because I think it is going to be an era when those tools were that creativity and, man, just going out and ripping people's heads off is really going
to
be all that
matters. Yeah, I'm hoping it comes full circle with that, you know, because, I mean, it has become, like what you were talking about, like ears, you know what I mean? You got to have the right, it's just being with the, you know, the whole, being on the tip of the whole tech part of it, you know?
Right, right.
Rolling with the ears, rolling with the TM, rolling with the, you know, the monitor guy, the guitar tech, you know, all of that, you know? And
I compare it to a girl that... you know, take a date out. No, date, you know, want to go out and, well, I can't go anywhere without my makeup. I got to get my dress on and stuff. Real band can go up there and take.
With nothing.
You pick a guitar, okay, tune it.
Yeah.
Give them a. We were doing a show in Green Hall and I walked by and I'm like, Manny, what is that over there? He goes, what? I said, there's something wrong, man. That guy has his guitar plugged directly into that amp with the round cord.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. No wires.
Sounds great. Where are all those things?
Yeah, well, where's the rest of the stuff?
All the magic boxes?
No wireless.
Who is that?
Direct.
No,
it was a singer from the Hollister scene.
Oh, Michael Barfield.
Michael Barfield's band.
Yeah, Michael Barfield. Yeah.
And, you know, he plays the harp, old-fashioned mic. But that guitar player was just clean, and then he'd get dirty. And all he had was the little on-off switch thingy, you know, for the back of his Fender Twin. And I was like, something's wrong with this picture.
Before we left Billy Bob's, Roger called me up to the stage and he was talking to me over the mic. He's like, hey man, Paul Overstreet's gonna come up and do a couple of songs tonight.
Oh, cool.
And he doesn't use ears, you know, and he's just like an old schooler, you know, whatever he is. And he just rolls up and we had to set up a wedge, you know, and had to check the mic, you know, and it was just like, I hadn't done that in a really long time.
Not since I went out and did Piano Man or something.
Exactly,
You know, the other way did. Still rock and roll to me.
Yeah.
When I was doing my first house gig, we didn't even have monitors, and when we finally went and bought some Surin Vegas, they looked like little lamb's wool on them and stuff.
Yeah.
You said something about a Shuremaster earlier.
Yeah, the vocal Shuremaster.
We took the two columns, took them to the house, cut them in half. Rewired them and put little legs on them. We all had monitors.
My dad just told me the other day, he's like, man, we had the two Shure Vocal Masters. We bought an auxiliary speaker and it was just jumped it off of like the main speaker. And he's like, you want to know about some challenging sound gigs? I try and get that not to feedback, you know, full throttle main coming back at you. You know, he didn't even have monitors, you know, so it's just
I wish I still had my tuck and roll custom PA with the blue sparkle. God, that was something else. I think I had six inputs and.
Nice.
Yeah.
Your rig.
It seems like it would be real easy. Just get the guy to produce the record, get the guy to, you know, the musicians to play on it, get the gear to go do the show. But then again, hey, some of these guys just come and go, you know what I mean? If you can't deliver the goods.
Well, that's like
saying
it'd be easy to take eggs and flour and whatever and make a cake. Well, it just has to be the right ingredients.
Yeah, right. The right temperature. Right. Yeah.
And you can take the same stuff in the same recipe and all three cakes are going to be a little different what you do.
Yeah,
but it's always something about having that touch.
We're going to take that cooking metaphor. Well placed there, Alan.
Hey, thank you very much.
Into the vault section. What are we going to pull out in the vault this time?
I want to hear
Phil Pritchett. We need some Phil Pritchett.
That's what I'm going to hear.
Oh, bless you guys. Bless you guys. Yeah, we were playing a lot with Craig. We put out the High Tide in the Heartland album, floating around, and it was fun, man. We played those songs and was made aware that you guys had listened to it some, you know. And of course, y'all saw the show all the time.
Yeah.
Everything.
But I'd always try to play one when you walked in soundcheck when I saw you. I'd be like, where do you go when you sleep at night?
I always love that because that was a deep cut off of that record that you always bring up. So we're going to take a good look at the making of and talking about My Own High Tide in the Heartland.
Yeah,
I get asked about that album all the time. And we'll take a look at that here in the vault coming up next.
Trees shook with sound when the lightning hit the ground with a thud. I was standing on the hillside losing sleep, seeking shelter and leaking blood. Tried to keep my feet moving, but I was soon to find
Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. Phil Pritchett here on the P2 Podcast. Did you know if you call me, 817-733-5256, or email me, phil@philpritchett.com, me and the band will show up at your house and play a gig. Now, there's a couple of papers that might need to be signed first, some things agreed upon, but it's very easy, and it happens all the time. And that guy next to you at the show He might have already had his own Pritchett show. You don't know. So dig it up. Call me. Bring us in. Download all the records for $4 a piece off p2tunes.com. Or if you're an iTunes diehard, you can go there. It's everywhere. Oh, man. Oh, man. We're going to look at the making of High Tide in the Heartland by Phil Pritchett and the full band. Well, man, I was giving the guys, Manny and Huff, a tour of the facilities here. We came through the, and over there on a table, very unassuming, is a Tascam 24-track digital recorder. Just kind of over there. Man, he's like, oh, look at this over there. I said, hey, man, we recorded the whole High Tide in the Heartland on that thing.
He was kind of like, maybe no way. There, you said, right? How much you want for it? How much you want for it?
That's right. So it's sitting over there. Yeah, we did that. That was the record we did in the stockyards at the old studio on the second floor of the corner. Had the corner office there right above the Cadillac bar across the street from the Longhorn.
Yeah.
Right there at Main and Exchange, up the hill a little bit. And, yeah, this was really a response of me really being broke. Man, we had some kids, you know, bought a house. And it was just like, man, and I'd gone to the well so many times to make Suburban Legends, to make the live album, to make Tougher Than the Rest. And I'd just go, man, I'm just not going to be able to go out and drop the cash and rent this. I can't do it, man. And I'd heard some demos from a friend of mine who had done a Tascam, just some simple recording. Just said, man, it's 24-bit, you know, it's, you know, if you kind of know something about what you're doing. And that's what led me to this. You just start learning about mics, you start learning about preamps, and
sounds familiar.
You can't,
yeah. Sounds familiar.
You can't believe how much better your acoustic guitar sounds through a $100 tube preamp instead of plugging straight in the board. You're like, oh my gosh, you know.
Yeah.
And then you're like, man, this one costs $500. Why, you know, or whatever. And you start moving up the chain. So this was kind of my first foray, and it was just like two mics on the drums. The whole album,
wow.
Stolle was in that room with two mics. Lynch was direct. We only had 8 inputs,
you know.
So I had like a Shure 57 mic for the scratch vocal. We did go back and redo the vocals and a couple other things, but you guys, I know that was the one y'all kind of listened to.
Oh, yeah, one of my favorites.
It definitely has a distinct sound to it. It doesn't sound, but that was kind of part of what I was after.
Well, sure, and yeah. You know, like Ben Folds, one of his records, you can hear a lot of the bleeds, but if you don't have to go over and do it over, it's... It really doesn't matter. You're gonna.
Yeah. You know, how did y'all? Did I give y'all? I hope y'all didn't pay for your copies. Y'all didn't buy a High Tide in the Heartland at the merch stand there after the show.
I probably didn't, but I think I bought everything else before that when you were at the
show.
Oh,
come on!
Well, no, I always try. That's my thing. You know what I mean? Yeah.
We try to help out. I mean,
yeah, all the time. Yeah, yeah. And you probably gave me a couple of them, but you know, I think I've paid for every shirt that I've gotten, every P2 shirt.
I think that might be right.
Yeah, I've tried to at least, you know, discounted, of course.
Sure. Discounted,
of course. You know, I always want to try and support.
Man, it's always fun. It's always a good idea to make friends with the sound man, make friends with the doorman at every show.
Yeah,
it's always good policy. I tell young bands. But yeah, we did that up there. I mean, it's like it was a glass room. I mean, it was windows. So we had a lot of street noise. You really listen to that album with like headphones. You can hear buses going by on a slow song. Which,
so it was, it was Stolle and Lynch?
Stolle and Lynch, yeah. And I'd just gotten, you know, the Yamaha keyboard. So I was experimenting. I hadn't played piano much at all. I mean, I was just plodding around on that. But, you know, being having fun with it and... there
how long
it
did
sits.
It take?
It took, man, it took, well, you know, that was the cool thing. It's like I got to spend a ton of time on it.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, just burn mixes and go home and just sit there at your stereo and go, I'm going to go back and just tweak, you know. And, of course, you know, when you rent the studio and stuff, you go home and here it is. You're like, hey, man, that solo is just too quiet. Just, hey, man, if we're going to break it up.
$6,000 you can turn
it
up.
Yeah, that's another $500 to remix the whole thing. Then we got to remaster it. What? Oh, so man, me having the keys to just break it open all the time, and I wouldn't admit this really online, but really it's gotten where I record in here, man. I've kind of almost have my mastering, my mix. It's just all kind of happening at one time. So that when I get home to listen to a take, it's got the, it's, you know, you can tell if there's just, man, there's too much compression in the drums. Yeah, I got to go back and pull out.
I think that's where producers, you know, have a style. Like, you know, people start digging that sound. So, like, you know, they're like, I want their Pritchett sound.
I think, man, it's blasphemy in the hallowed world of recording to say that just mastering is just a dying art, a useless art, I would almost hazard to say. It's so loud. I mean, tracking stages, I mean, you had to be so careful. In early days in digital recording, in the old days, in analog, you had tape distortion. And in the digital, you didn't want to clip. So you had to be very careful. You had to stage. And man, you can just protect yourself on these rigs now. Just limit and just... You can just track, and if there's not a lot of signal going to tape, well, there's no noise on it. You can just blow it up, when you get in the mix. There's not a whole lot of... So I tend to caution guys just going, well, they say that the real difference is mastering. This guy's going to charge me $1,000 a song. I'm just kind of like, dude, let me just blow out the mix here with a preset from Pro Tools, and we'll just kind of... gas it up, if it sounds too bright or something, bring it back. I'll bump a couple and mail you another copy. Maybe that makes me an idiot, but I don't. In the old days, it was an art form. It was very hard to keep those levels. Very mysterious, but I think the mystery has, the curtain's been pulled back. It's just like, dude, you're just making it a little louder, and you're making the track sound the same. But it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, back in the day, it was a... The guys that I used to always see was like Terra Nova. Everybody used to always send their stuff to Terra Nova.
And everybody still does.
Oh, really?
Everybody
still does. I still don't know exactly what mastering is. I left, in the project studio, I was just, the engineer guy, mic stuff. I would take it to tape, ADATs and whatnot.
Huff, you're a recordist. When you did what's your take on that? This blasphemy that I'm spewing out here.
I was actually going to, I was thinking on something else about Heartland. you had said something. You were just talking about, you'll hear something, you'll go home and listen to it and just to say, I want to tweak the guitar or something. Yeah. Have you ever just scrapped a song and just totally taken a whole new approach?
Yeah, oh yeah.
I mean, this isn't going to work.
Oh, there's some secret Heartland tracks.
Really?
Like a whole different song or just a version
of the
song?
You still keep the structure of the chord, but just just totally... I mean, I'm not saying turn it into a reggae song or anything.
Yeah, man,
we were doing some stuff with Roger in here, Stormy Cooper Media. Stormy, our bass player, has a studio. And there was a song Roger wanted to demo because he's getting into that, really testing it out. And like you say, you have the, more time. It's like you can do what you want. And there was one song he did, and it was just like, he just didn't like it. Awful. So we just took this whole different approach. Stripped it down to like a more of a rockabilly, just bass.
Yeah,
it got too big, and so it's like, to heck with this, just go back and do bass, piano, drums, and now it's just perfect. Sometimes you can overseason,
no question.
Get too much going,
no doubt. And what happened your own studio? I think that kind of goes back to our point about just being original, being creative. It's hard, man, when you've got 5 days booked, and you're like, man, by the end of that fifth day, we need to have this thing done. And man, you've got your 10 songs written. And you rehearse them and rehearse them and rehearse them, and you get in there and you're plowing through them and you're mixing it. It's almost like it's a four guy. I compared it to like standing. You got that engineer and you're standing behind some guy with a paintbrush and the canvas, and you're like, man, just kind of take that red paint and just sort of drip it over it. You know what I'm saying? And the guy kind of goes, I thought we were painting a mountain. You're like, I know we are. I know we are. But we got the mountain. Just kind of, you know what I'm saying? And then he kind of does this and like that, and you're like, yeah, you're not driving the thing, you know. And so in here you can drive, and it might be just between phone calls. I come in here, man. I just start, but I will dare to do the most far out free. I mean, I would never present some of the stuff I work on in here to anybody. Scare them, There's like, dude, that's an 18-minute just of you. Pressing a low note on a Wurlitzer and then just dialing through all the filters. I'm like, yeah, that's pretty. I was lost there for about an hour. Then the phone rang. I had to go back. But you never know when that's gonna. I mean, we need just something else, and they're like, "What the hell's that?" And you're like, "Well, it's something I was working on." I think you always have to develop it. I think that's healthy.
Before I worked in that project studio, talking about doing like weird things like that, I recorded just about every single punk rock, rock heavy metal band in Corpus on a 4-track recorder that couldn't afford to go to the studio. I charged $7 an hour, and it was free mix down. And I had a 4-track cassette recorder, and I would ping and pong.
I'm coming over there.
I would do two mics on the drums, ping and pong them over to one side, and then put the bass to the guitars. And we were in my mom's garage/bedroom converted studio thing.
Sure.
And
some egg crates on the wall.
Not even that. Wood paneling. We cut a hole on top of a box, stuck a mic in there with a little jack in the box, cut the hand for the jack in the box so we could ISO the jack in the box, and then we ran it through like a bunch of reverb and a slapback delay, and you know, just made it kind of crazy.
So, and it's so thrilling to do that kind of stuff.
And
it was so fun, because that's how we recorded in high school, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, even just the dumbest thing, like, man, we'll run the vocal through the amp and get the reverb and turn the phase on. You're like, dude, yeah.
12 years later, I ran into that guy, and he's like, you know, he started doing more recordings. He never did anything except for like local stuff, but he's like, man, we never got to have that same feeling like we're doing something different. We went into the studio and the guys were just like, hey man, okay, well there's the ISO booth, do this, do that, do that, do that. Okay, here's your record. You know,
to point. It seems like there's so many right ways to do it,
yeah.
You know, and I feel like with High Tide, and man, it was kind of a grind, because I was met with a lot of resistance, man. This isn't a real studio, this sounds like crap,
yeah.
It sounds like I go, man, it just sounds like we're recording in some abandoned garage. I'm kind of like, we are recording in an abandoned garage.
Perfect, you got it.
Yeah. It sounds like you're singing in an echo chamber room. I'm kind of like, I am singing in an empty room. What's your point? I know. So you're saying, what are you saying?
We're agreeing now. Right?
It just went on and on. On and on and on. But eventually everybody kind of came around to it. We had a good time with it. There's a lot of good documentary. If you ever see YouTube, Phil Pritchett, there's a little documentary about making that album. It shows the space and all of us wandering around and feeling things out. But, yeah, it's kind of getting back to that. And I guess that kind of experimentation is hard to come by. I'm waiting for someone to really break it open or something. Because now it's like, well, they wouldn't do a jack-in-the-box thing. I've got a little plug-in. It's a jack-in-the-box under a bucket.
Yeah.
You're kind of like, you just push the button, and there it is. Right?
Yeah, there it is, yeah.
But someone needs
it's
to, like...
It's an app for my phone. I got it right here on my iPhone.
Someone needs to, like, actually record, like, the CD being burned and run it through. So, just, I don't... I mean, just someone needs to just, like, man, just go outside. I mean,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And not just come in here with their guitar all the time.
Yeah. No, I feel you, man. I would love to...
Of course, there's no market for that,
right?
Or so we think.
Well,
I don't know.
Maybe you're kind of what made genre.
what made Zeppelin or these guys? Why do we all talk about these old bands all the time? Man, they never wanted to make the same album twice. They never wanted to do what the other guy was doing. They, you know, Pink Floyd and the guy, you know, they just went. They just wanted to lock themselves away in a log cabin in the woods and with an organ and. You know, just...
I wonder if those guys...
Like Van Morrison once told, I can't remember what record it was, he came in and played all of his acoustic guitar, and just rhythmically, and just went just... Da, 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 da. And then he left a note for his band. He said, you can only record between midnight and 5 in the morning. That was the only instructions. And just the flute player, organ player, and everybody was like, what the hell?
But I wonder if those guys were thinking about getting rich, though, you know?
Or were they
rocking out?
No, they were poor, you know? But that's what drove them, you know?
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And when you're driving to success, there's no, why be creative? Where I think ultimately some kid out there is going to, he's going to push the limits and it's going to be dead on.
Yeah.
And man, and not only that, in this day and age, there's a potential to say, man, I made an 18 song album. I'm going to sell it off my website for $1. And I'm going to go, whatever. And he's going to be on the cover of Time Magazine. Just, you know who that kid is? Just... No, I don't know that. Just he had 3 billion downloads of his album last night.
It's $3 billion, a dollar piece.
So does he have like $3 billion?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just the next day, he had $3 billion. Just, I mean, that's the potential of the music business now. Everyone's talking about, oh, you can't sell anything anymore. You can't sell an overpriced 17 song of homogenous crap. But let me tell you what, what you don't hear or see, and I know they're out there, and I'm just trying to encourage anybody who said, man, I just want to take my guitar and like put the strings on upside down and record underwater. That's the path. That's the path that's going to have potential.
Yeah.
In my opinion, you know, or some degree of that, you know.
I'm ready.
You
to
agree, Huff?
I do. I totally do.
Am I talking?
I know. I'm loving it, man. I'm just watching you, man. Your arms flailing. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And you know, Manny hit a good point though, man. Manny hit a great point. You know, if you're doing it to get rich, man, just go, dude. You know.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, go turn into Bernie Madoff or something. You know,
that's right.
You know, because it's, you know, it's this fate. You know, I don't want to get all
cliche
here, but you know, I never said, hey, when I'm 49, I'm going to be in a studio with Phil Pritchett doing an interview on an iPod or whatever.
You never aspired to those heights.
You know,
yeah.
But you know, but I did care about my instrument. And you know,
sure.
If somebody asked me, why don't you learn to play guitar or whatever, and I'm like, Because, man, these 88 things still fascinate me. I still don't know what's going to happen. You know?
That's right.
And yeah. I will do what you're saying. I can get off on one note for a while, man.
It's play with all the sliders, you know, the drawbars.
Every once in a while, I think that, like what Huff is saying, you know, everything has led to this, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you may have been joking, like, to here, yeah. But, you know, there's a lot of people that would pay to play, you know, a venue like Billy Bob's.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And every once in a while you walk in there, it's a great place. And, you know, there's a lot of people that want to play. You
For
know,
you, it's another night's work.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Really like, not. No, it's not. That, you know, the other day I was sitting at my house, you know, I just finished mowing the yard or whatever, and I realized that what I needed to do, I had the time to do because of the job that I'm at now, you know, and I love it. Mm-hmm. So I like shot Roger a text, and I said, "Hey man, you know, this is the best gig I've ever had, and I appreciate it, and thank you for letting me do this."
Sure.
But going back, I mean, you know, it's cats like you running sound for you that, you know, and anybody that's ever played anywhere that I have been associated with in this scene at all.
Right.
You know, it's all led to this.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's going back to like nothing but practice. You know, it has been nothing but practice.
That's right.
I may not be at the quote unquote big show yet. But man, every day is the big show for me, as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, yeah. You know, I mean, hanging out with you guys here, I mean,
we joke about our,
like, Huff,
our, you know, two favorite, like, days. We joke about our two favorite days of the week is when we get on the bus and when we get off the bus.
That's right.
But as soon as we do, we'll be calling each other. Hey, man, you want to take the kayaks? Call Roger. We'll meet at the beach. We'll still hang out, man.
Yeah, right, right.
You know, or you know, like we did a canoe trip a couple years ago. Clay Corn from Pat Green's band.
Sure, yeah. He did a project back here.
A bunch of us all, you know, it was about 12 guys from mm-hmm. four different bands went on an overnight river trip, and it was just
cool,
a blast, man.
Yeah.
The camaraderie. You know, Medeiros and I will go golf with Stormy, do whatever. We're always together.
Hanging out.
And Grissom that played Dave out of Austin.
David Grissom, yeah.
Yeah. He was, great, it was so funny because, yeah, he played on the Lloyd Maines part. He was the only non-band member that played with us on Here It Is. And
Mellencamp, and we, Joe Ely.
Yeah. And we were in Storyville.
He's a cat.
Yeah, Storyville.
And we were in the other room, and we're like, hey, Roger, what time are we leaving? And oh, okay, we're going to meet Monday. We'll do the overnight. We'll put into the Colorado River, come out here. And Dave looks and goes, you guys hang out together when you're off the road? He could not grasp that. Because, you know,
I can't either.
Yeah.
I'm just kidding. Stu and Blue, we love you.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, that is pretty unique. That is very, very unique, I would say. And, I think the job, quote unquote, whatever it is it does. I think that the biggest intangible of it is the freedom of it. You are on the road all the time. It seems like you got all this. But, man, you still have the freedom to do things during the day or you know, go to dinner with somebody when you're on the road. Or, you know, it's a lot of...
Yeah.
There's nobody just chewing your ass all the time.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't get it, but it's, you know, once you kind of get used to it, or... I for one, never thought I would leave Corpus.
Right.
And, you know, here I am. I live in Houston now.
Yeah.
You know, and I used to not like to travel.
Yeah, right.
And now that's all I do. You know, I was telling you earlier, I have a 2-year-old truck that has 98,000 miles on it, you know?
Yeah.
So, but, you know, once you realize that there's different jobs you could do, you know, that are...
That's right, yeah.
You're blessed and, you know...
Very blessed,
You're blessed and, you know, you're...
We need to get you guys up here for a... Man, we've even talked about you, Huff, the band on the next record, man. Maybe trying to get you up here for a day or something.
Oh, that'd be awesome, man.
I'll try.
The only rule is we don't know what we're going to play. I mean, I'll have a general idea of something.
Great.
I was trying to experiment with just like a loose... Just, man, we're just going GC, A minor... Something.
I love A minor, by the way.
A minor.
Can I?
Yeah, your favorite chord.
Can I engineer it? Yeah, it's actually my favorite chord. One of the only chords I know.
You know, speaking of that, I prefer not to get material sent to me when I'm going to record.
Mm-hmm.
I would rather sit, talk to the producer, chart it out. Because if I get it and I decide, man, this is going to work perfectly, and I get there and play that, and they're like, oh, no, man, I'm sorry, but I don't want anything.
Yeah,
like
you're
that.
Wasting your time. Yeah, you already have it. Yeah.
I have that in my head, and sometimes it's hard to shake because if I think it's really. Pretty darn good lick here.
Which if you just sit with the band in the studio and you kind of hit a little grink, 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 grink. Just do that. Yeah, oh, that's good. That's good. Just do that at the end of the chorus.
Did you get that?
Yeah, right. Right. Well, cool, gentlemen. Hey, some studio talk, life talk, high tide in the heartland, exploring the studio space talk.
Yeah.
Fellas, I'm telling you, you're going to want to hear that. I use that Will Ferrell thing all the time. Yeah. That tambourine's loud, Phil. I'm like, fellas, I'm telling you, you're going to want to hear that tambourine in there.
And we're talking about the line about Kirby and that in the
yeah,
that song,
yeah,
High Tide, man.
Record,
that was
Well, that was a sledgehammer deal, man.
Yeah.
Of course, talking about the great Kirby Stanley, the legendary road manager for Roger Craiger, who so soon left us, way too soon. Gosh, yeah. When was that?
It was four months after I got in the band.
It's been almost, I think,
coming up here, it's going to be 5 yeah. years.
By far, the worst thing that's happened in my sphere of influence. The biggest bummer of the whole thing that I can recall. One of the best things was we played a show one night, and it was funny because everybody would go to Craiger's room, and Kirby would come to our room to listen to our BS all night.
Yeah.
And dude, he would.
I think I've done that
just,
a couple times.
He would just egg me on. He would just egg me on just all the time. I don't know. I could just crack him up for some reason. And and one night we kind of went through one of these spells where we were kind of pranking each other a little bit. And I came out to my red van in the morning and it was covered bumper to bumper with Roger Craiger bumper stickers. I just thought, Kirby, you know.
You need.
Yeah, but it was funny. He didn't just plaster them all over. Like, it was the kind you peeled off, like you etched.
Yeah. Wow.
You know what I mean? And it was just, it was like in the very corner of the windows, like every window. Like, it was, like I just loved Craiger. It was just up and down. And I had to pick off every individual letter. And, man, when he passed away, there was still like residue of those stickers on there.
Wow,
every time
yeah.
I got in my car, I just was like, oh man,
I should have left.
What
them
a
on.
Drag!
Yeah.
But yeah, I wrote that High Tide in the Heartland song. There was a reference to that in there, at the room you bought me at the Bayfront at playing the surf club.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and,
that's
one of those songs you write in like 5 minutes. I've still got the Ramada Bayfront paper somewhere. I don't know.
Yeah, it was Ramada now Bayfront Inn.
Yeah, that was also around the time or a little bit after the big hurricane.
Yeah.
That's kind of what that song was about, you know, just one of those feelings like, man, what else can happen? Dude, wow, you know?
No doubt,
one of those deals, you know, and tried to put that into some kind of context and record it in an empty space.
It did touch a lot of people. You know, Kirby was a really cool cat, and, you know, he was just great to everybody he met, and, you know, everybody loved him.
Sure.
So, you know, there's a lot of people that get that song.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
So, that's good to hear.
I know a lot of people that get that song.
Kirby dubbed me as the coolest old guy you'll ever meet. I said, Kirby, why does it have to be the old guy? Why can't I just be like the coolest guy you'll ever meet?
Yeah, that's right.
So now Frank, our new road manager, Sipper, always introduces me as, hey, there's that one, the coolest old guy. You know, he's really the old guy you'll ever meet.
Well, you know, a lot of people don't realize, absolute truth, when Ryan Lynch, our bass player, started, he got a new job or something, he was going to be leaving. And Kirby played music a little,
right?
And was always kind of messing around. I just said, "Man, if you want to play bass in this band," I said, "No problem."
Wow!
And he was just like, "What?" He goes, "Dude, I suck, man." I'm like, "Dude," I go, "But we like you." I go, "You'll learn eventually."
Yeah.
I said, "You know, it might be rough for a little while." I go, "But we don't care." I said, "Just I said, man, you can start getting through the gigs." And man, I think there was maybe a day or two where he really kind of considered.
He bought a bass.
I just go,
"He's
dude,
all stormy. Check this out, man."
Yeah, dude, he was like, really? He goes, man, I'm terrible. I'm just kind of like, dude. I go, I'd rather play with people I like than people that are good any day, you know.
Yeah,
the old B.B. King once said that, you know. And there wasn't a better guy to have around. I'm like, dude, if you could be in our room every day, I go, dude, it didn't matter if you could hardly play a note. I would not care, really.
Yeah,
it's all yours if you want it.
I had the privilege of jamming with Kirby.
Yeah.
Jamming with Kirby once. And he did play. And Stormy has his whole, Shannon has it. The whole notebook of lyrics and all kind of stuff.
That's right, yeah.
Really good. We've been toying with the idea of cutting one or two.
Should, yeah. I've still got the pamphlet from his service that day. Yeah, had some of his poems in there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Coming home and all
that. Yeah, that's right.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
But that was a treat. That's a great memory for me because, you know, his crooked smile over there and we're knocking down Bud Lights and just jamming and do this one now. And it's, you know, he let me, you know, play my accordion, you know? Not many people.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually the party dies then.
That's right.
Uh-oh, put that thing up, man. We're getting out of here.
Oh, Kirby. Well,
that is some more. Glad we got into Kirby there at the end, of course.
Yeah.
High Tide in the Heartland. Can't talk about that without our old friend. Well, thanks to Manny Morales and Alan Huff for being here.
Thank you very much.
What a great time.
What a great couple weeks
here, man, of just bringing everybody up to speed, enlightening your musical life. These are the guys you see out there working on the road every night. You know, you go to those festivals and Phil's up there and Craiger's up there and Alan Huff is on stage and there's Manny behind the board. Now you know everybody is. So go up to him on the road out there and say, hey, man, I heard the podcast with you. Great stuff, man. We wish you all well. Have a great week. Go to philpritchard.com for all the answers, anything you need. Download the music. Download some Kreger stuff while you're out there, if you have some room left in that iTunes cart. Thanks to Alan Huff and Manny Morales. Once again, we will see you guys next week on the podcast. Take care.
Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you dream dreams in the middle of the night? Do you wake yourself to find that you're all alone? Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you see things with your eyes closed tight? Do you wish you could understand the things you're shown? Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you hear music play until the light? Do you wish you could remember the song when you wake? Where do you go when you sleep at night? Do you cover up when the sun gets bright? Is there anything left from the darkness you can't take?